Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ala. I'm joined by the wonderful Beth. We're both teachers at LSAT Demon, which you can find at lsatdemon.com. We got a wonderful question in response to the Study Buddy episode that we did recently, where we talked all about how the Study Buddy experience was invaluable to us. We got a really good question about reviewing logic games in a Study Buddy group, and I think we wanted to talk about reviewing in general on this podcast. So we want to give you some insight about how we did it and what maybe some things that worked and some things that didn't. So we'll kick things off with a student question from Lucy, and we adore Lucy. Lucy's written into the podcast a couple of times and we love the engagement. So hi, Ala and Beth. I love your Study Buddies series on the Demon Daily podcast. To follow up on your last podcast, my question is, how do you review logic games within a group setting? This is something that I struggle with in my own review group since I don't necessarily have my own whiteboard. Did you use an online whiteboard, iPad, pencil? Did you just share setups from your scratch paper? Thank you from Lucy. Thanks again, Lucy. Beth, any initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, first of all, great job. You're doing the right things if you're already like reviewing with other people and it's going in a good direction. I think if that's working for you, that's awesome. And I'm glad that you asked this because we did run into this issue of how are we going to review logic games together? And actually, it was the click of realizing that technology is our friend and we don't have to just do everything on Zoom or we don't have to do everything exactly the way it works in live classes on the Demon, because all of us were studying at the Demon when we were in a Study Buddy group together, but we didn't have a whiteboard either. And the way that we would review logic games and the way that we found eventually was most efficient was if we struggled with a game, we would just take a picture on our phone and text it to each other. So we'd have a picture of our scratch paper of our worlds and go through them like line by line and talk about what rules we started with, how we built worlds. Sometimes it was like the memory work is the hardest part of where did I start? Because when I'm looking at complete worlds, sometimes it's harder to remember where I started. But that worked great for us, just showing pictures. And then we could compare and contrast and go, okay, did we end up with the same worlds? Because that's a really good check to say, did I do this correctly? Are our worlds the same? And it's okay if they are, you know, laid out horizontally or vertically in a different way. But if we ended up with the same logically equivalent worlds, we knew we were doing the right thing. So we did that just by sharing pictures and scratch paper. And we would do it also when we would do review timed logic game sections. We would only really review things that we struggled with. We didn't really find it necessary to review things that we just totally rocked, knocked out of the park, didn't need to waste our time doing that. So really the person that struggled with the game would be the one to reach out and ask how the other person built worlds, if there was a more efficient way to start. And we would just talk through it that way. And once we shared our worlds with each other, oftentimes that person would actually just after our study session, go try it again on their own without using the worlds that we had given them, but just see, can I replicate this? Can I take these more efficient steps? Is there anything else you would add, Ala, about how we did that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you touched on some really wonderful things. I think one key piece of this, and we went over this in our first episode too, which was about vulnerability. I mean, I think like we just had a really good rhythm in our group and we were like, hey, I struggled with this game. Can you help me out? And that was a good setup to be able to reach out. The other thing I'm thinking of, and by no means are we asking you to like time your games or to think about time on games, but one of the ways we would evaluate like sort of how we were doing was like Beth was always a rock star with games. And I'd be like, okay, how long did you take on the first game? And she'd be like 6 minutes. And I'd look over and it'd be like 9 minutes for me. And, you know, we were doing roughly the same level of LSAT material, right? Like it wasn't like I was, you know, a much newer student or anything like that. It's just games were something that I struggled with. And so I'd be like, okay, so this game is solvable in 6 minutes because Beth just did it. And then I'd be like, okay, like, how did you break it down? And then oftentimes I'd find stuff like I would have like 3 duplicate worlds because I'd just gone overboard in my setup. And with an easier game, maybe I could have started with a more efficient place and then done, you know, fewer splits and come up with a less repetitive full solution. Like my solution would work. It's just like Beth's way was more concise and like more efficient. And so comparing time was like another thing that was helpful. Like we just like call out how long we took on each game. And then if there was like a real aberration, like I took 14 minutes on a particular game, maybe it's a 14 minute game, but more often than not, there was like a way for me to shave off some energy by just looking at it with a different split. And then I'd be like, oh, that's a really nifty way to do it. Let me go try it that way.
On that too, that was important to us. And this comes up all the time in logic games classes that I teach about time, and everybody wants to know how to shave down their time. And the thing that I like to emphasize to people all the time is the way that you get really good at games and eventually how you get to all the games and then how you get to all, or actually I would say all the games perfect comes first. And then eventually having time to do all of the games is getting really good at those easier early games in your section. So games one and two, it is not that either of us want you to focus on how long those are taking you. But I've been telling people recently that it's kind of like riding a bike. First, you learn how to do it correctly. Balancing on a bicycle gets easier as you continue to practice, though. So none of the methods change, right? We do accuracy first. We are going to do this correctly and perfectly. And then we're going to just get really good at flexing that same muscle over and over and over again. And that's how eventually you will get to, hey, I do those first two easy games really, really quick. And that's why I have 14 minutes at the end of my section to solve a game that's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Right.
Because the LSAT is going to tell you everything you need to know to solve it, even if it's a funky game.
Yep.
But that's how you eventually get there.
Yep.
So I think that's so important on games. And I always recommend that the best way to study games is by doing timed sections.
Yeah.
Not even drilling.
Yeah.
I think it's the best way because you see more of those easy games.
Yeah, you see more of the easy games. And I mean, I think that piece of advice was so integral for me towards the end of my prep because I was like 2 points away from perfect consistently. It'd be like 3.5 games. And I used to focus all my time on the third and fourth game. And that was just like not where I was actually losing out on time. They were taking me a long time because they're difficult games to do. And then, you know, Beth would come and be like, this took me 5 minutes. I'd be like, oh my God. This is where like all my effort is being wasted. I'm taking 10 minutes on these games. It's not about the time, but it's that I was proficient at games. It's just that I was bogged down. I was just triple checking, right? Things that were impeding my ability to do it efficiently. The other thing I wanted to add, like with respect to the student question, which is, I'm really glad that you asked this because I think if I had to change any part of like how we did our study buddy group, which is we probably could have spent more time reviewing logic games. Like I think like LR, we were always like really good at reviewing, right? And I think RC also comes in that format where we're like, where in the passage does this say this, right? Or like, how did you read it this way? But games,
they really lend themselves to discussion.
Yeah.
Whereas games are like, it just is what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like binary. Like yeah. It's either the answer or it isn't the answer. And because of that, it gets very easy to like ignore that. And I'm really glad you're asking that. And I think we probably could have done a little bit of better time, like collectively reviewing games. And the reason we didn't, which is like, yeah, this is like kind of how you do it. But if you can dig in and ask the questions about like, why'd you split with this, right? Why did you go from this world to that world? One of the best tips I got from our third study buddy was about, do you remember what that was? It was like how you split up conditional rules and then you make a chart of it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, she taught us how to do when you've got if A is in, then B is in. She taught us how to turn that rule on and off.
Right.
She taught us
like almost like a combination of like circle slash with like an in and out game. It was really wonderful.
Yeah, with like a T table.
Yeah, it was a T table where you have it active or you don't have it active. And then and it was like such an amazing way to do that game. And it was such an amazing way to tackle a very difficult rule. And when she broke that down, I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think I remember using it on the official test, like at least once.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, we are just talking about when we're given something like if A is in, then B is in. You would do a world where the rule is triggered, right? So if A is in this group and then we're going to put B in and then we're going to do a different world where the rule is not on. So A is not in. That doesn't mean we have to put A out, or we could put A out then if it's just two groups, but nothing happens to B then.
Right.
Just nothing gets touched. The rule is off, so we don't care about it. But that's how you fully can incorporate that rule if it's just if this variable than that variable.
Right. Yeah. And I was terrified of conditional rules. And that was such a killer for me. And I would not have learned that if we didn't spend time like reviewing conditional rules. And I remember vividly when she had to like break it down for me. I think it took me 20 minutes to actually understand what she was saying. But like that breakdown probably made her better at those games. And it definitely made me better. Like I had another tool in my toolbox.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I just answered a question on the Ask Button about this the other day about splitting and about games. And I feel like it's relevant to this.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about it in some of my games classes. So when we think about splitting, a lot of times people talk about how many splits is too many? Do I have too many worlds? Did I not split enough? I like to remind people all of the time, a lot of it just comes down to preference. If you want to eliminate flexibility in your worlds, because that's going to be a little clearer to you in the questions, do it. Do it if that makes sense to you and your brain. And in some ways, if that's the way that works for you, that's going to end up being more efficient for you to take the time to jot down one more world than it is trying to do the mental gymnastics of what does this symbol mean again? Because I saw Beth use it, but I don't use that symbol. So only use symbols as well that you actually know. I think they're learnable. We use pretty consistent symbols here at the Demon when all of us teach logic games, or those of us who teach logic games. But if you don't know your symbols, they won't help you, right? And then the other kind of just tip that I gave somebody the other day was, if I have more than two things denoting flexibility in my worlds, that's a good chance to split. If I'm having four different arcs across my world and I have a couple arrows going around and I have a couple flip-floppies back and forth, it's like, you know what? That's a little too much to decipher for me. That's a really good place to split.
Yeah. And I think that's a wonderful tip. And Lucy, thank you again for writing in with your question. We hope this gave you some insight about how to review. And kudos to you for prioritizing LG review in your study groups, because I think we all could have spent more time on it. And it's a really good place to spend time, even though it doesn't lend itself to like the best kind of like review the way LR or RC does, but certainly something that is worth your time to invest into. Let's talk about LR review, Beth. Like, what do you think were like the most sort of important facets of how we reviewed, or maybe just like how we went over LR questions in general?
Yeah, I think high level, what we would do with LR, we would do sections again. So we would do a time section every day that we were studying. So we would do a time section. And if we missed a question, those are what we would review, right? So we'd all come with, hey, I missed 16, I missed 7, I missed this one. And the person who missed the question would be the one to lead the review on that question. I think we had to practice a little bit of self-control, right? So say I missed question 7, I'm going to show up, or I did show up and say I missed question 7. I went in blind though. I still was in blind review so that I wasn't just looking at the answer and telling myself, oh, I get it now, or I know it. But I think that was really helpful, actually doing a blind review in front of you and our other study partner. And the way we would do it is, if I was the one who missed it, I would be the one reading the passage, breaking down the passage, and trying to understand the passage. But the really helpful thing about having study partners there was that Ola was awesome at it. Ola would be like, is that really the conclusion, Beth? What are they concluding? Or is that really what you think that means? And those questions to each other, though, were so helpful to actually getting to understanding, because we couldn't just pretend we got it and see that the answer was actually A instead, and I'm going to move on. Yeah, I think that's at least high level how we did review of questions we missed. What would you add, Ola?
I mean, I think that's fantastic. That's basically, you know, how we tackled LR questions. One of the ways that I tell students to review LG, actually, is to do the game, and then if they mess up, to go look at an explanation, watch just until it clicks, and then come back and keep trying the game, right? And then to go into that, do, you know, rinse and repeat, do as many rounds of that as you need to until you get the game. We tried to embody something really, you know, similar when we did LR questions, which is, can we give the person who's struggling with the question just like an ounce of help so that they could help themselves get to the answer? And I think that model was really vital in how we sort of helped each other learn, because, you know, we're not trying to be the know-it-all or the gunner in the room, right? We don't have to get questions right. We already did the sections. Like, there's no competition. It's actually, can we provide an environment where the other person can learn, and can we notice where they're tripping up, right? Mm-hmm. That's, I think, where the bystanders can sort of like learn from the other person being on the hot seat, right? So if Beth is going over a question that she missed, me, by listening to how she's breaking it down and by noticing like exactly where she veers off, I'm like, ah, that's a place where like we can build a little bit more understanding, right? And then if we can like steer her back just a little bit back on track, then maybe she'll sail through the rest of the question. And it's just that little adjustment that we're missing to be able to crush that question.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, I think another, if not the most important question that we asked on LR and RC was, we would stop each other at the end of the passage, or if we tried to run into the question already, the person who missed it, one of us would stop each other and say, wait, what is your prediction? Do you have a prediction for this? And also, we had already seen the question, right? So I knew question 7 was already a weakened question, but that was still a great chance to stop and say, what is your prediction to weaken this? Even if you already know they're going to ask you to weaken it, we want you to sit here and come up with a prediction. And that's where the steering came into, because we did help each other and say it was something about car crashes or something, and one of those statistics questions, we would start to ask questions like, what would happen if this? What would happen if this? Do you think that's a prediction that could help you weaken the question? Not totally giving it to each other, but trying to guide in a helpful way, not just watch each other struggle.
Another, you know, piece of that just falls under the exact thing that you were talking about, is that we would, when we came up against something that like the other person was clearly struggling with, we would allow them to keep struggling to the point where like it's not helpful anymore. Right. And I think that's something that you notice over time. Like, okay, after this point, I don't think this person's ever going to pick up on what the right answer is. It's kind of that ship has sailed, and we just need to go over the whole question again. And I think noticing that can be really helpful and not waste time, because I mean, I think a lot of students want to be really thorough with review, right? Or they get very invested into getting better at the LSAT to the point where they might be overdoing it. But also remember that, like, if it's not clicking, that's not the end of the world, right? You don't have to win all your battles that day. Just win one. Just win one battle. Yeah. That's all you got to do.
Right. Absolutely. If we could help each other lead each other to the correct answer, that's awesome. And if not, another way to get to understanding is having somebody explain it to you, as long as you reach the point of, oh, okay, I understand it now. It doesn't always have to be lead the horse to water, right? Somebody can also teach you.
Yeah.
And that's what is really helpful about having sort of the give and take. And we all have different strengths and weaknesses. I had questions that I was bad at. I had questions I was good at. And some of those strengths and weaknesses complemented each other, especially with having 3 people studying.
Yeah.
We had different knowledge going on. The last thing that I would say about LR review, and one thing that I would really recommend nobody neglect to do, is after, so it was like breaking down the passage, right? Breaking down understanding, identifying conclusions, premises, or identifying if there's no conclusion, and then making predictions, getting to the question, making a prediction again, maybe if you didn't make a prediction in line with the question. But from there, the person who got the question wrong, the onus would also be on them to go through each answer choice and talk about why it's wrong or why it's right. I know like Nathan and Ben's key questions are, or their key reminder is, it takes 2 mistakes to pick a wrong answer, right? You didn't choose the correct answer and you also picked a wrong one. So we would go through then what makes the answer that I chose wrong, and why did I pick it, and how can I not do that again?
Yeah.
And then what makes the right answer right? Why did I not pick it, and how can I not miss something like that again as well?
Yeah, I think that last point is a really big one, Beth, which is that's the whole point of a study group that you meet with consistently. I mean, like, I knew what my problems were, sure. But I think Beth and the other person that we studied with, like, just from witnessing how many times I would, you know, mess up a particular question type or struggle with a particular game, they, as the people that were, you know, looking at me from the outside in, knew what my problems were. And because I was spending time with them, they'd be like, Ala, you messed up a role question last week and you're doing the exact same thing again this week, right? They could help me identify my weaknesses in a way that I may not, you know, want to do it. For me, that probably actually went like, I used to beat myself up a lot, and Beth and the other person we studied with would kind of like pull me back and be like, look, there's a system here. You just need to implement the system. This isn't like a shame thing, right? You just need to figure out what it is that's working out here and then see if you can do it better. And then maybe another personality type would just like be very casual about their mistakes, right? And then we had to be like, hey, this is a pattern. Let's see if we can like fix this. And the fact that we kept coming back to each other meant that we were giving each other the opportunity to focus on weaknesses and get rid of them in a safe setting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there's that accountability again, but some mutual trust, at least to some extent, of we've decided to do this together. I'm going to trust you with this. We're going in the right direction towards it too. I know I said last thing when I was saying that LR thing, but or the thing about the answer choices. But there were also times that the three of us would all miss a question. You know, probably later on in our studying when we were closer to finishing sections, which I will proudly say, even on my last official LSAT, I guessed on my last LR question. So that is not necessary to score in the 170s to even finish your sections. But once we got up there to those more difficult questions, we would have times that all three of us would miss it. And we would go over the question altogether. And if we hit a wall, it wasn't just us using each other as resources. We then would go to the demon and we actually would sit on FaceTime together. And sometimes one of us would be watching an explanation video of Nathan talking about a question. The other one would be watching Ben talk about it. And the other one of us would be reading the explanation. And then we'd come back together and go, okay, here's what I got.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So those resources are there for you as well. I don't want you to feel like you only have each other, or even if you're studying independently and using these review tactics, you don't just have you. We want you to use the resources in the demon. And beyond that too, please use the ask button if those explanations don't make something click or we don't have an explanation yet, because we are here for you and we want you to understand it because we think it's understandable.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good point to end on with LR. Over to RC. I think RC was one of those interesting sections. Maybe we reviewed it a little bit less than LR, I feel like, right? I think if we had to categorize it, it'd probably be LR would be like rock stars at reviewing, and then RC, and then probably gains at the bottom. But I think we also did a good job with RC in that we kept it really simple, right? We remembered that all the answers are in the passage. We just have to go and find them. And the more straightforward we were about it, the fewer questions we'd miss. And it would just be like, oh no, I forgot about that. Or it was like the very beginning of the passage and I just like didn't remember that that was an answer, you know?
I'll never forget that day.
I remember that question. It was like, so both Beth and the other study buddy had missed it. And I remember as I was doing that section, and I remember looking to the first sentence of that passage and I got that question right. And I was like, I have a feeling both of them are going to miss it. And I don't blame them at all because that's so sneaky.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it was so funny. And you were not gloaty about it at all. But Ala was like, would one of you just read the first sentence? Just read it. Just read it. And we were both just to our shame. But we were like, all right, that's a mistake I'm never going to make again. I don't want to miss the understanding of the whole picture. And missing something said in the first paragraph or the first sentence is missing the understanding, or the comprehension in the reading comprehension.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so on RC, Ala still is, but Ala was our RC queen. And again, as she still is, even teaching it here at the Demon still. But I came in, at least when we first started studying, and I really, really disliked RC. And the way that Ala treated it as they're all must be truths, it's very matter of fact. We're not looking for outside information. We don't have to make leaps here based on what was said. We just have to be interested in what was said enough to actually answer these questions. And again, stop trying to pull all of this outside stuff in. So if we missed a lot of questions, I think what we would do is we would do like a story time session like we do in RC classes, where one of us would read the passage or we would switch off paraphrasing, making predictions as we read, right? You can speak more to that of what that story time looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think we did that. We also tried to like build our understanding of the passage just from having read it, right? Like, let's say we didn't have the time to do like a full story time. What we would do is be like, what was the main point here? Mm-hmm. Right. And then somebody would say it and we'd be like, oh, I don't think that's what the main point was, right? Or it's missing a really critical piece, or we got bogged down in the details, or, and this is one of the ones that does not feel good, which is the main point was one thing for 2/3 of the passage. And then they do a 180 at the end. And we had to like keep track of the fact that they did a 180 at the end, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. We would try to quiz ourselves on the understanding first. And then as we went through the questions, we would ask ourselves like, we can't even make a case for this. Like if we're actually being clear about what the passage was saying, there is no case for any of these wrong answers. So in some ways, I think it sometimes, you know, came out the way LG review came out sometimes, like that's the answer because it's in the passage, which is funny. Yeah. But other times I think it was, did we do the work to understand it as well as we possibly could have? And maybe the third category was just like, and this is something students ask me all the time, which is, I don't like these passages, or I don't like this topic, or this was so boring, I didn't care about what was going on, right? And we had to figure out ways to build a relationship with the passage that wasn't dependent on our like energy levels or our interest. And that was, again, like a struggle that I think like maybe one of us struggled with, and we had to be like, okay, how do we come up with like fixes for you to come up with a method so that you can go through it and not feel like you're collapsing?
So I love that there was a recent, you've been doing the RC series with Chris, and I've really enjoyed those, especially the one where you talked about how an RC passage is the work you do up front is like building worlds in logic games.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of what you're getting at, is why our study methods were similar with both, because it was like, there's one way to build worlds. We were told one thing. There's not much to deviate with that. We're not going to add or subtract anything from the worlds that we're building in our RC passages, but actually making sure together, do we have the correct understanding, which always seems to come back to the main point. It wasn't about summarizing things together, but it was asking, why did the author write this? And especially when we didn't care, it was, why does the author think you should care? Why does the LSAT think you should care about this?
Yeah, no, I think that's super important. I think we were nice to each other, but we didn't sacrifice any learning opportunities to be nice to each other. I think that was like mm-hmm. the balance that we struck, right? With RC, and this was a section that I even struggled with at certain points, right? This was by no means something that like I had mastered or anything like that. We all of us like made steady progress. And yeah. We were tough on each other when we needed to be, but then we pulled off when like it was something that clearly we just needed to get better at. It isn't anything that we can overanalyze, right? There's nothing to analyze. It's just we need to practice, right? So we yeah. tried to balance all of those things. And because we had like two other people in front of me that could do meta-analysis on me, I didn't really have to worry about like missing things because I could depend on them for doing it. And I think RC yeah. was one of those sections because it tends to be a more ethereal section than the other yeah. two. It was really helpful to like sit down and be like, okay, why is this the wrong answer? Why did I pick this? Why was I tempted into it, right? Is it something about my personality, something about how I'm approaching the test? All of the above. And we would break it down and we would take that as the lesson to like sort of try the next RC section with.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that too, you just touched on it with the answer choices. But we did do the answer choices in RC the exact same way as we did LR.
Yes.
The person who missed a question would be the one to lead the question, and we would go through. Oftentimes, it was me going through, and I would have to explain to Ala and our other study buddy, why did I choose this wrong answer? Why did I think it was supported? And if I wasn't getting it, they would help me get there. And then again, those same questions, why didn't I choose the correct answer? How am I going to avoid that mistake again?
Yeah. It was essentially, we created an environment where we could process through these questions and understand, like, it's like pressing until it hurts, right? Mm-hmm. Like, some of us had struggles with understanding the passage, or we just like didn't understand the author's tone at all as we were reading.
Yes.
Right. Or we are very passive on the questions. That's something I struggled with, right? Whatever was the issue, we unearthed it. And section after section, week after week, we were like, okay, so did you do a better time reading this time? Right. Or were you more aggressive in the questions like you needed to be? And it's again, that meta-analysis that comes with the fact that I had two people that were monitoring me and finding like, okay, this is, these are all the struggles. And this is what we're going to chip away at today when, you know, I'm on the hot seat to review a question.
Yeah. And I would just say on that too, and we touched on this with our last Study Buddy podcast to kind of intro it and how you can use a study buddy and things. At the end of the day, it came back on, Paula is not taking the test for me. I'm taking the test for me. And it is still on me to actually grow and improve and understand and learn and get better at this test and practice the skills. So we would kind of pick up those tools from other people and be able to bounce things off each other and reach understanding. But at the end of the day, it was still about, what do I do when we get off the phone and I attempt my next section tomorrow? Do I actually apply the things that I say I learned today in this study buddy session? I think it worked for us. And I also don't think it's the only way to do it. Again, we talked about this last time. Of, I think having a study buddy can be a helpful tool. And if it doesn't work for you, or maybe doesn't work with the group that you're in right now, it, you know, it's not necessary, but it was helpful for us. I wouldn't even say it's sufficient, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. It, for me, it basically became this place where I could like find those things so that I can go fix them myself, so that I can go practice them myself. And even like to this day, I literally did a game this morning in one of Matt's classes. And I think I heard your voice in my head for like how to make a split for like a particular in out game that I was doing. And I was like, damn, like these, this is what this practice does for you, right? It creates a well-oiled machine for how to tackle these things. Because I'm certainly not somebody that was like good at the test to begin with. I mean, neither of us were, right?
Neither of us. Yeah.
And we got better.
We both
better.
Had diagnostics in the 140s, right?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we got better because we prioritized creating that well-oiled machine. We didn't care how long it took. We didn't care mm-hmm. that we weren't always feeling good and in control. But over time, like, we made ourselves people that could tackle anything that came at us. And that was, at least for me, it was really only possible because I was constantly exposed to my weaknesses. Doesn't feel good, but it was really good.
Yeah. And I think now too, people are hearing us on the other side of it. We got through it, right? It was hard though. We did it for six months just of study buddy time. Each of us had also additional different time of independent study. But for about 6 months was when we were doing consistent time sections together and reviewing. So you're seeing us on the other side. And I think it feels a lot more jovial now on the other side. But when I was scoring in the 150s and we had 20 questions to review, doing a study buddy session seemed a lot more daunting, but powering through and pushing through that was absolutely worth it for me. And I know for Ala and our other study partner too. And maybe another way will be, those of you who are listening, will be your way instead. But yeah, I just think like you're seeing us on the other side. So don't lose heart over that, but it is totally possible. The other thing that I was just thinking was, when we were actually towards the, you know, tapering off a little bit, maybe towards the time when we were thinking about taking official LSATs. And actually, I remember, I think when I was either in the low 170s or high 160s was sort of where my score range was. I remember looking at my dashboard on the Demon, and you can see how many hours you've spent on Logic Games, LR, and on RC. And my games were at something like 48 hours spent studying. My LR was at something like, you know, a little lower than that. It was like 40 hours. And my RC was in the 20s. It was 20 hours. And I had been kicking myself and like, why is my RC still my worst section? And that was my answer. I have not invested the time into this because I've told myself I dislike it. And actually, that was a point in time where I kind of diverged on my path from what we were doing as study buddies. And I had to start drilling RC passages on my own. And we did some of them together still, but it wasn't as much of a weakness, I remember, for you guys at that point. And I was like, I know what I need to do. And I know that at this point, I got to walk the path alone because I didn't put in the time.
Yeah, I'm really glad you share that, because around that exact same time, I had to diverge into games because that was my weak section. I just could not get to perfect games. And I had to go do that on my own because I'd seen, even though I had spent a lot of time on it, it just wasn't clicking. And I was like, and then that's where I figured out, like, it's the easy games, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. Yeah. And it was the personal accountability that ultimately made me get there. But it was a combination of all of these factors.
Exactly. So, I mean, there are lots of helpful ways to review. That's how we did it at a high and detailed level. We went both ways. Yeah. Thank you again, Lucy, for your question, because this sparked a whole conversation about how to review everything. I do hope that was helpful and helpful for folks hearing how to review LR and RC as well. And again, either doing it with a group or with partners or on your own, I think those same questions can help you. What's my prediction? What's the conclusion, et cetera? Ala, is there anything else that you would add today before we close out?
No, good luck, and make sure you keep giving yourself credit for making time for this, because every time you prioritize yourself, it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Cool. Well, thank you guys for listening. Great talking with you today, Ala. You can email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question, excuse me, or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening. See you next time.